This is Bristol, and you are listening to a podcast from the Bristol Confringe reading series. Welcome back to part two of the January Bristol Confringe, and for our second reader today, we have an international guest, all the way from Welsh Wales. So, Tesh Turner is a fantasy novelist. He's got one book out, the Janus Cycle, from Elsewhen Press. And I believe today he's going to read to us from a sort of sequel. So let's have a warm welcome for Tesh, please.
Hello. This is my first book, The Janus Cycle. It's kind of, my publisher called it gritty and surreal urban fantasy. It takes place in a slightly surreal version of our own present day. And I'm having a sequel for it published later this year. I'm currently in the editing process with them, and it's going to be called Dnousos Rises. So this is kind of a short story collection and a novel at the same time. Like, each chapter is narrated by a different character, and they all go on their own personal sort of coming-of-age journey. But they all end up crossing paths in a nightclub called Janus, and then there's a cataclysmic event at the end of the story that they all sort of unite them together. And the sequel's kind of in a similar vein, but it's in a bar called Dnousos, and some of the narrators are narrators from the last book, and some of them are new narrators, so it's kind of indirect. So, anyway, I'm going to read some from the third chapter, which is narrated by a character called Pandora, who was actually a secondary character in the Janus cycle, who I've upgraded to the status of narrator for this one. I'm going to read three different parts from it. They're all quite short, apart from the middle one's kind of medium. The first bit is from the start, where she works in an investment bank and she sometimes struggles with it morally. Mr. Watts is my boss. He is part man, part petroleum jelly. I call him that because it is my belief he immerses himself in a vat of Vaseline every morning. It really is the only explanation for the slickness of his swept back hair and that shiny forehead of his. Even his implausibly white teeth are always gleaming. Another theory I have is that this practice leaves him so well lubricated that he just spends his days slipping and sliding around the corridors of the building, occasionally managing to grasp hold of a door long enough to pull himself into one of the rooms. That explains why he is always flitting around other people's offices rather than in his own. I'm not quite sure what exactly it is that he does, as he seems to have no purpose but to do the rounds and check up on others. He has reached that golden apex of his career, where he's considered so good at his job, whatever it is, that he no longer needs to actually do it. His face emerged from a gap in the door, and he cocked his head like a snake which had just spotted its prey. Pandora, he hissed as he slithered into the room. He shut the door and we were alone. Hello, I said. He slicked towards me. How is the Ekweld proposal going? He asked. I took a deep breath. How could I have forgotten about the Ekweld proposal? I don't think we should invest in them, I said. Why not? He frowned. The nearest thing to what one could call an emotion which can never be prompted out of Mr. Watts manifested itself in a tightening of his voice, though it was not quite the sentiment one would expect. It was frustration he was expecting, like I was a machine which wasn't working properly and he couldn't figure out why. I paused. During my research, I came across some problems with their business. Problems? He repeated. Problems? What kind of problems? I've seen their figures. Their GP is through the roof. They're a sure thing. What kind of problems have you found? Well, I began, in the last 5 years, they've been heavily involved in the palm oil trade. You see, in Sumatra, there... He interrupted me. That's in Sumatra. What else? Last month in India, dozens of workers died in... That's in India, he shrugged dismissively. I am more interested in what they can do for us, here. There were children in that fire, I said, softly, hoping that maybe, just maybe, I could elicit some empathy out of him. I'd sooner draw blood from a stone. Oh, Pandora, he shook his head, he smiled. Pandora, I understand what you are saying, I really do. But his dead, lizard-like eyes said otherwise. But, Pandora, he put his hand on my shoulder. I hate it when he does that. You already know what you're supposed to do when you have concerns like this, don't you? But I did that last time. He raised the volume of his voice and adopted that tired patriarchal tone that I've grown all too familiar with. What does company procedure say you should do if you have a comment to make on practice? Fill out a comment Caroline form, I said. He nodded. So do that, he said. Fiberteen Investment Bank has a dedicated ethical practice officer now. It is their job to worry about such things. I knew that all too well. I submitted an application for the role when it was created a few months ago, but I was turned down. They gave it to a woman called Jermaine. She is like Mr. Watts, only she has a vagina. And she didn't reply for the position because she was passionate or felt a calling. She is a careerist and saw it as an opportunity to elevate herself. And she was perfect, because Fiberteen were never interested in becoming ethical. They wanted a thinly veiled PR officer, a drone who was charming enough to keep up appearances, knew how to smile at the right moments, and possessed enough faculties to be able to spin plutocratic rhetoric. I am sure they'll take it on board, Mr. Watts lied. But in the meantime, I want that proposal finished. The board want you to present it tomorrow morning. Isn't that exciting? His voice changed, becoming higher. His hand ventured a little down my back and then to my waist. I really wish he would stop touching me. He put his mouth close to my ear. They want you to do it, he whispered, like it was the highest honour I could have ever dreamed of. You could get a promotion out of this, he added with a wink. He then got up. His greasy hand left my waist, but then returned to pat me on the shoulder. Remember what I always say to you, Pandora, he said. I nodded. What is it? Business is blameless, I uttered. It was his mantra. It basically means that when you're in this building, everything you do is in the name of the company, not your own. So there is no need to feel guilt or worry about facing consequences. The consequences part is mostly true. Some of the employees here get away with murder, not literally, but effectively. And all that happens is the company gets involved in an occasional legal battle and end up paying a fine. No one has been given any jail time. Fiberteen Investment Bank's profits are so high, we're almost untouchable. I'm still working on the guilt part. So now I'm going to cut a little later in the story when, later in the day, Pandora goes to meet her friend Freylia at the bar called Denousos, which is what the book's named after. So Freylia is actually one of the narrators from this book. And the two of them have a rather complicated history. They grew up together in foster care. And then Pandora was actually known as Pandy back then, but she doesn't like being called that anymore. They were separated as teenagers because of an incident, and they haven't seen each other since Pandora slept with her Freydia's boyfriend in the last book. Oh, and Freydia is just trying to convince Pandora to take some mushrooms with her. So, why not, she asked. You heard what Kev said. The authorities don't know about them, so they're not illegal. I'm a Christian, I said. I know that sounded like a rather pathetic excuse, but it was just the first thing which popped into my head. Oh, go on, Freylia pleaded. Let's just do it. It'll be fun. You can go to confession on Sunday, be forgiven anyway. That's Catholics, I said. I'm an evangelist. Be a Catholic tonight, she shrugged. You can go to confession on Sunday and be forgiven, and then after that you can be born again, as an evangelist. Next week or whenever. Then you'll be forgiven twice. I think that covers all clauses for your spiritual salvation. It doesn't work like that. In truth, I haven't actually been to church for a while, but I didn't tell Freylia that. She's an atheist and would only get all smug about it. I just couldn't face any of the congregation since I started sleeping with Stephen. The weirdest thing was realizing that I didn't feel guilty. I didn't even feel like what we were doing was wrong. And once I started to question that, I began to question everything. Every niggling thought and theological paradox which had ever formed in my mind, but I swiftly repressed, during all those years, began to wriggle around in my mind, squirming and growing. How about if I said that, if you do this with me, I'll forgive you, Freylia said, interrupting my train of thought. I looked back up at her. I'm not sure for how long it had been for, but I had been staring into my wine glass for a while. No one was more surprised than me when I found myself saying, fine, let's do it. The next sequence of events was all a blur. Freylia led me up the stairs, through a chamber, and then along an eerie corridor which was framed by a series of parabolic wooden beams. This part of Denousos was unsettlingly quiet, even a little spooky. Freylia opened a final door and then we walked into a room where Kendra was waiting for us. The witchy one was a fair description. I couldn't see much of the room, much because the room was lit by only a single candle. But Kendra appeared to be wearing some kind of tattered robe. And she had one of those faces where it was impossible to tell how old she was. Someone could have told me she was in her 20s or 70s, and in either case, I could have believed them. Her hair was like a bird's nest, quite literally, all brown and messy, and there are twigs and leaves caught within the tangles. And this is the woman I'm supposed to trust for the state of my mind this evening, I thought. But I knew it was too late now. I had just consented to Freylia, of all people. There was no going back. Freylia approached the table first. Kendra looked at her, up and down, and then she smiled and dug a handful of little mushrooms which had long black stipes out of the pouch and dropped them into Freylia's hand. She looked at me next and narrowed her eyes. She muttered something under her breath, but I never quite caught what she said. She seemed to stare at me a bit longer than she did at Freylia, and when she dug into that pouch of hers again, it was a much larger handful of the mushrooms she'd tipped into my palm. I looked at them and then turned to Freylia. "I've got more than her," I said. I tried to give some of the excess ones back, but Kendra hissed and made several hand gestures. She didn't like that. It appeared that dose had been specifically chosen for me. "Bottoms up, Pandora," Freylia said, grinning as she raised her bald fist up to her mouth and then waited for me. "That expression doesn't even make any sense. We're not drinking from glasses," I thought as I mimicked her. "I can't believe I'm doing this. I only slept with one of your boyfriends, Freylia. This has got to be worth about five at least." Nevertheless, I dropped them into my mouth. I chewed a few times, expecting them to be foul, but they weren't too bad, actually. In fact, they were quite sweet. "I think tonight is going to be fun," Freylia then said as she grabbed my hand and led me away. We walked back down to the bar together. I was nervous. Freylia bought the next round of drinks, wine again. That calmed me down a little. She began to talk, but I wasn't really listening to what she was saying. Anxiety crawled into my chest. I looked at the walls, the window, the ceiling, watching the motion of her lips as she spoke, waiting to see if anything changed. "When do you think it's going to kick in?" I eventually interrupted her. "I don't know," she shrugged. "This one's going to be entirely new to me as well. Probably about the same amount of time as other shrooms, I guess." "And how long is that?" "Oh, don't go acting like you're all clueless with me," Freylia droned irritably. "This is hardly the first time you've done this, Pandy. The fact that you put the act that you put on when you go to church and swish around that fancy job of yours doesn't fool me. You seem to forget how long I've known you." I hesitated. I couldn't think of any fancy retort for that, and I didn't tell her off for calling me Pandy either, like I usually do, because I realised that what she said was true. I am turning into Pandy again. Want to know what Pandy was like? High on a school night, her eyes rolling into the back of her head. That was what Pandy was like. Lost her virginity at the age of 13 while drunk on a cheap bottle of vodka. That was what Pandy was like. Wandering around raves, wearing a skirt which was so short and tight that everyone could see her knickers, and being happy about it because she enjoyed the attention. That's what Pandy was like. Not even knowing the names of any of the men she made out with, but remembering that most of them were at least twice her age, because that was the sort of party she went to. Pandy. Let her foster sister take the rap for her drugs during a police raid, and then, as she is dragged off to juvenile detention, say nothing. That's what Pandy was like. "Are you all right?" Freylia asked. Her expression softened, and she took one of my hands. "I'm sorry," she said. "I know I'm a little blunt sometimes. Don't worry, you'll be fine. We're in this together, okay? I'll look after you. Just try to enjoy yourself. When was the last time you actually let yourself loose a little?" she asked. "Just before that night you were taken away from me," I thought. I drank more wine. "Don't worry," I said. "I'm fine." The truth was, it wasn't just anxiety I was feeling. I was excited too. It had been a long time since I had experienced this. That feeling when you've just taken the plunge on a substance you've never tried before and you're waiting for something to happen. The anticipation, your heart rate starts to quicken, and you're not quite sure if it's the drug or just adrenaline. You're worried, exhilarated. You keep thinking, well, it's too late now. My eyes were drawn to something on the wall. It was blue, very blue, almost neon in its radiance, and the lines were all wavy. They were moving too. I became fascinated by it and walked to it so I could see it better. It was a landscape painting of a river surrounded by fields and hills. "It's Tristan's," Freylia said, standing beside me. "You remember him? You met him that time I took you to Janus." I nodded. "It's beautiful." I experienced a peculiar compulsion to touch it so that I could feel the textures, so that I could know it, but I reconsidered. "There's my inhibitions going," I thought wistfully. I stared at the river for a while. The patterns of blues and whites began to mingle and swirl. The river was moving. "Look at that," Freylia exclaimed with a childish grin on her face. She was pointing at something. I narrowed my eyes to get them to focus and saw a piece of driftwood floating downstream. It had been swept into the current and was moving across the canvas. Freylia and I watched as it made its way to the other side of the frame, laughing, dimly aware that other people in the bar were staring at us, but not caring. Freylia and I looked at each other in a shared glee, and for a fleeting moment I experienced an amnesis of the closeness the two of us used to have. I looked back at the painting again. The driftwood had vanished now, but there were other things there which I couldn't remember seeing before. The picture had changed. There were several rows of grey buildings clustered along the side of the river. They were tall and grey, bleak, and they had all had chimneys which were billowing clouds of smoke into the sky. The hills in the background had been obscured from view. There were no fields now. "What the?" I began to say, but Freya grabbed my hand. "Come on, Pandora, let's go outside and get some air," Freya said. "People are staring at us." We walked across the lounge side by side, both of us grinning. I couldn't remember being this happy for a long time. It can be a very intimate thing, taking a mind-altering substance with someone. You embark upon a journey together. From the moment it makes its way down your throat or nasal passages, you know that for the next few hours of your life, nobody will quite understand you like the person who took it with you. And the same goes for them. You're tuned into the same frequency. Freya opened the door and the cool air caressed my face and neck. It was refreshing and invigorating. There was a body of water in front of us, softly undulating, luminescent. I looked up at the sky and the moon was shining, full and blue. "Where are we?" I asked, turning to Freya. "We just stepped out of the bar, but yet it seems like we had stepped into a different, completely different plane, a different time. There were buildings all around us, but they looked a bit dishevelled and old. Am I hallucinating, or is that a river in front of us?" "It's just the canal which runs through Yesterville," Freya said as she walked towards the edge of it. "It's always been here." "Ahoy there," someone called. Freya and I both looked around, searching for the source of the voice, and the water rippled, disturbed by something. It was Kev in a rowboat. "Ahoy," he said again, as he sank his oar into the body of the canal and steered the vessel towards us. "Kev," Freya exclaimed, bursting into fit of giggles, "what are you doing?" He looked up. "It's a boat," he said innocently. He had a big smile on his face. I must have been high, because in that moment he looked rather charming and handsome. "I know that, but what are you doing in it?" Freya asked. "Come aboard," he said, offering his hand. Freya and I both looked at each other. I know that getting into a boat in the dark of night with a guy you've only just met while high sounded like it might be possibly the most stupid ideas in the world. But in that moment, it seemed like exactly the sort of thing I wanted to do. Freya clambered on first, and then as she settled herself down in one of the wooden benches, Kev turned to me and extended his hand. There was a moment of hesitation, but then I looked at him into those guileless, sincere brown eyes of his, and somehow I just simply knew that he was one of the good ones, someone I could trust. I gripped his palm and he pulled me in. My feet left concrete and I stepped into the berth and the boat rocked. I grabbed Kev's shoulder to steady myself. "All aboard?" Kev asked, once I'd sat myself down on one of the benches. "All aboard," Freya and I said in unison. He immersed the oar into the depths of the water and the boat sleeked into the middle of a mellifluous plain. The starlight reflecting on the surface glimmered and then flitted from the swell we caused. I reached out to touch it, experienced a sense of elation as my fingers ran through cool, wet stars. We were embarking on an adventure and I had not felt this alive for years. So there's now just one more bit, which is from the last part. And basically, they go on the three of them go on an adventure, which I won't tell you about, you know, maybe if you want to read it, you find out. this comes from the following morning when Pandora realizes she has to go and do a presentation to the boardroom. And she doesn't have much time to prepare for it, but she does organize something. "Pandora," Mr. Watts said, unable to hide the surprise in his voice when he saw me. "Hello." "Pandora," he repeated as he looked me up and down. "Your hair and your..." "The meeting starts in 5 minutes. I don't think I look too bad, considering I hadn't slept, showered, or changed." "Maybe you should go back home and make yourself more presentable," he suggested. "I can delay the meeting. I'll tell him..." "It's fine," I said as I breezed past him and made my way towards the boardroom. "I'm ready. Don't worry, Mr. Watts. I've got this." I opened the door before he could make any other protest, and the syndicate, all 12 of them, looked up at me as I made my way to the head of the table. I almost laughed out loud at how symmetrical the sight of them was as I peered down at them. 6 of them were sat on each side, all of them garbed in almost identical suits with silver watches strapped around their wrists. "So," Mr. Watts began, swiftly recovering his composure as he walked into the room, "this morning Pandora here is going to present us with the research she has compiled. Now, I just thought I'd bring this out into the open. She does have a few ethical concerns over Ekweld, but the two of us had a little chat about it and she's agreed to push her personal feelings aside and present us with her findings as impartially as she can." The members of the board all chuckled to each other like I was a child who just didn't understand how the world worked. And as I looked at them, I felt a shift in my perspective, a new sense of clarity. I used to see these people as the cream of the crop, the successful elite, the ones who had really made it. I used to crave their approval. I used to feel anxious when I was around them. I suddenly saw them for what they really were. quite pathetic, really. I realise that hundreds of years from now, if we're still here, it'll be these people who'll be seen as the wrong side of history. They'll be remembered as the one who put profits before people, cherished money before resources, and prioritised the economy over the environment. They were out of touch, disconnected. It was them who didn't understand the world. They were vermin. Yes, I said, smiling at Mr. Watts briefly before I turned my attention back to the rest of them. I did have a few concerns, but as the Honourable Mr. Watts often tells me, this is business, and business is blameless. I plugged my memory stick into the projector and switched it on. And I am also just a woman, so my opinion is only secondary, I added. If anything I say makes you feel in doubt, then please feel free to brush it aside and blame it on my menstrual cycle. Mr. Watts laughed, but it sounded forced. I could tell he was beginning to get anxious. He shifted uncomfortably in his seat. The machine began to power up and the screen went blue. I mean, we all know that Fiberteen are going to go ahead with the deal anyway. Whatever gets said during this meeting, I said, as I waited for the menu to load up. As all this company really cares about is numbers, but it does look good on the books if a bunch of us meet up now and then and talk, doesn't it? And how else are we going to validate our jobs without engaging in endless banal procedures such as this one? My presentation appeared on the screen and I selected it. So, without further ado, let us ascend into today's exercise in fast together. Pandora, Mr. Watts growled warningly. The first picture to be projected on the screen was of an orangutan. Why should we care that Ecuador are quietly destroying the natural habitat of several dozen endangered species, I asked, when, if our profits are high enough, you could get a bonus at the end of the year which could buy you, ta-da, I exclaimed, switching to the next picture, a brand new Bentley. You've had that Porsche for almost a year now, Mr. Donald. It's beginning to get a little rusty, I said, winking at him. Mr. Donald blushed, a few people gasped, and a couple of them chuckled nervously, as if they didn't quite know how to respond. The next issue I'd like to bring up, I said as I moved to the next picture of Chinese children working in a rather grey and dismal-looking sweatshop. Pandora! One of them exclaimed, wincing. You can't show things like that in here. It is most unseemly. I frowned at him. Is there something wrong? I asked, innocently turning back to the picture. Surely you already knew that Ecuador are one of the great modern pioneers of child labour. I shrugged. Anyway, the reason I brought this up is not because I'm trying to talk you out of it. On the contrary, I'm actually trying to highlight to you a missed opportunity. You see, many people who work for Ecworld in the developing world suffer accidents, and as there is no social support or compensation scheme available to them, they find it difficult to find further employment. I have an idea which will be beneficial for us and them. I propose we reroute our office phones and create a call centre for these people to work in. I mean, you hardly need all of your limbs to answer a phone, do you? And they'll be happy to work for less pay than their more able-bodied peers. To be honest, we're behind the times. Everyone else has call centres abroad now. Why not us? It would take some of the strain off our rather hefty workloads, and it would also be good for dealing with those awkward moments when Mr. Jackson's wife calls and we all have to pretend we don't know that he is fucking his PA. Mr. Jackson's face went white. So what's next? I muttered as I turned back to the screen and prompted the next phase of my presentation. A picture of some of Ecworld's product range came up. Oh yes, I remember now. Ecworld still have not admitted that one of the additives they put in one of their best-selling beverages is highly carcinogenic, but why should we care? I shrugged. We have invested in the pharma companies too, so that just means even more profits for us. Some of that money can go towards funding a wonderful event such as this one. I flicked the next picture. A photo of Mr. Watts and Mr. Davies wearing party hats with their arms sleazily draped across the shoulders of Jermaine and Belinda. The Fiberteen Investment Bank Christmas party. That oh-so-enjoyable evening of the year where we pretend to be normal human beings and loosen up those boundaries a little with a few bottles of bubbly. The real bonus of that night is that being drunk is a great excuse to touch female members of staff, even more inappropriately than usual. Or, in your case, Mr. Smith, I turned to the grey-haired, bespectacled man at the back, Thomas, our cute, young, blue-eyed intern. Don't worry, Mr. Smith, we do not judge you. We are very modern and progressive here at Fiberteen. Everyone is equal, as long as you're not poor or from the third world or something. The opera was getting quite loud now, but I carried on regardless. An image of a town which was flooded a few weeks ago came up next. Now, I said, raising my voice so they could still hear me, I know that global warming is something we all take very seriously. I mean, all those meetings we have, brainstorming ways to reassure the public, have done a great job bringing those emissions down. But I was also thinking, why don't we just screw it, admit that? And that was as far as I got before Mr. Watts dragged me out of the boardroom.
BristolCon Fringe is a monthly reading series produced by the BristolCon Foundation. Our thanks to the Shakespeare Tavern for providing us with a venue. The music at the beginning of this podcast is The Future by Chevy 174.